Welcome to Speaking of Strong Style, where we discuss the news, events, and issues surrounding New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'm Stephen Conway. With me, of course, Jeremy Finestone. We're contributors to the Fight Game Media Network. We are just a few days away from Sakura Genesis and one or two other big shows going on this weekend, I think I've heard of, maybe. But it is a very busy weekend in all seriousness for professional wrestling. New Japan has a big show coming up with a World Heavyweight title match on top. We've seen a couple of shows this past week that were mostly in the service of setting up Sakura Genesis. So how do you feel going in a couple of days before this one, Jeremy? Granted, with all the things going on, this might not be the biggest version of Sakura Genesis we've ever seen, but there's still a World Heavyweight title match on top and some good stuff.
I'll tell you this. If you'd asked me that question before the third, or at before the after the third and before the fourth, I would have had a completely different answer than I have now, which was underwhelmed. I thought the show yesterday did a great job of building up the weekend show for me as a go home. And while not required viewing, if you want a show, because you have so much free time this weekend to get hyped for Sakura Genesis, they did a great job. We'll go through it all and talk about it. But I am more optimistic and into this show and ready to make time for it more than most anything else besides WrestleMania this weekend. And I will definitely be like ready to talk about it next weekend or next week when we get to it.
A lot going on. So we're going to preview Sakura Genesis match by match. We'll take a look. Venkan, we're glad to see you here. Dunstan, I know we've gotten your questions, and we will answer those as we go along. And we're going to talk about a little bit of Windy City, right? We've had some more matches announced for that. We also have the schedule for the G1 Climax tournament.
We do.
So that is something that popped up. So I'm going to bring this up here. And
before we do that, and that's a nice tease, we have a couple of things, programming notes that I want to get out of the way because we have a lot of viewers joining us early on. So next week will be our 100th episode, and we are going to have Justin Nipper as one of our guests to celebrate as we do that. That'll be next Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. Immediately after Windy City Riot on Friday night, about an hour afterwards, we are going to be coming back again live, recapping the show with the WeWork Stiff host, Josh. And he is going to join us all the way live from Australia, and he is going to be recapping the show, whatever happens here, there, and everywhere. And we wanted to share that with you. And speaking of Windy City Riot, the Keeping It Strong Style team reached out to us and let us know that there is going to be a New Japan Pro Wrestling fan meetup. Now, if you don't know Keeping a Strong Style, it is Jeremy Donovan and young boy Joshua Smith. And they've been doing this, doing the coverage beat for New Japan Pro Wrestling for quite a long time. So they're going to be meeting up at this location. And if you are interested, you can reach out to the KI Strong Style podcast, and they will get you hooked up with more information. So that is the Keeping It Strong Style podcast. They're doing a meetup at the Windy City Riot. I have spoken to them off and on. I give them a seal of approval.
And that's at 4 p.m., so just before the show, right, in Chicago there. So, yeah, very cool. So, yeah, with that in mind, let's take a look at that G1 Climax schedule. Now, there weren't very many surprises on this, Jeremy. This is the basic structure they use for the G1 these days. It begins with 2 days in Osaka at Edion Arena, for instance. We go to Hiroshima and then Kagawa. So all of that is fairly standard. And, of course, it hits the usual cities around the house show tour. Nagasaki's there, 2 days in Fukuoka, and then back at Osaka, Aichi, and then 2 days at Korakuen Hall. So none of that is surprising. They hit Chiba, Shizuoka, Niigata, Miyazaki. And what we do have is 19 dates. So I was getting out my little pencil there and drawing this out, and that indicates to me we're going to get the same structure as last year. it feels like they're going to do the same thing as last year. Now, I know 18 dates at first, I just thought, ooh, or 19 dates, meaning, oh, okay, two blocks of 10, nine matches, and then the finals. But if you think about how they did last year, it still works. So they had four blocks of eight. And first of all, they have quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals. So that's date 19, 18, and 17 right there. So 16 shows for block matches. And what they did last year was, I believe the first four were exclusive. So night one was the A block and then preview tags. Night two, B block, preview tags, then C, then D. So everybody's had one match and there are 14 left, which means A and B, C and D all the way through. And then you get quarterfinals, semifinals, finals. That's how I read it. What did you think when this came out?
I did not look at it other than to see that Chris Samsa at one point said that it has not been confirmed whether it could be a block of two blocks of 10 or the way that you suggested it. I don't know if the math checks out for either one. Okay, let me ask you this. Are you in favor of the lesser blocks with more matches in the block, or are you in favor of more blocks with lesser matches?
I would rather have the two blocks and the more matches, but I'm not the one that has to work them. So to be fair on that, I think you get more. I think when you focus the tournament on the best guys, you get the best matches. And we have seen last year was not a strong G1 in terms of match quality compared to other years, certainly. And a lot of that is because you have to fill out a 32-man G1 with people like Yujiro Takahashi, with people that aren't maybe at the quality that you would expect from the G1. Of course, we had the newbie bracket last year. They put, you know, the bruisers in one bracket and all that. So there were some gaps in it, I thought, last year, where we had entire shows where you got one or two really good matches. And in other years, when it's 10 guys, or excuse me, you know, the two blocks of 10, those 12 guys aren't in there, that you tend to get a higher concentration of really great matches, which is what made the G1 the G1 for me and what made it the best tournament in the world. Venkin mentions Tangaloa. Yeah, I mean, a whole bunch of Tangaloa singles matches doesn't exactly make me want to turn cartwheels. And we'll talk about the dates too, because Venkin asked about how they're spread out. It's spread out pretty traditionally in about a month, about 4 weeks or so. I believe the first two shows, July 20th and 21st. And then it goes all the way through August 17th and 18th. Both of those are Saturday, Sunday, opening weekend, closing weekends, Saturday, Sunday shows.
I hate to use the word purity of the tournament when you have like less groupings, less blocks and doing that. But I just, like, I don't know if they're prepared to just line them up and knock them down like dominoes and do the complexity. I think they're trying to protect way more people and build way more people up right now. And so I like lesser blocks, but I am okay if the composition of these blocks going forward has more compelling stories rather than what we got last year. I thought there was a lot of potential that wasn't delivered upon. Like, I wanted some of these matches to be a bit more than they were last year. And I'm talking about everybody across the board, you know? So what I'm looking for is the freshman class to take a leap into the junior class and skip being sophomores, if that makes any sense. Like, I want the level up. I want everything, all the experience that they had in the cup, Wrestle Kingdom, all these experiences that all these young guys have had, and then put them in the midst of it and not treat it as if it's like they still have a ways to go this tournament. I want them to go far. I want them, like, this needs to have an advancement about this G1, and I think you can do that with more blocks. If they are able to accomplish that, I am willing to look past a work rate issue in order to achieve a greater goal. But I don't know what the priority is, and I don't know, like, where they're looking at. For all I know, we could just be having a guy on the hunt for David Finley after the IWGP title in form up, because I'm not sure I like that idea, but that's entirely possible. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think the chances are Jack Perry is in the G1 at this point?
Perhaps. I don't know. It's again, all that depends on Tony Khan, not on what Bushiroad necessarily wants. You know, if they feel like they want to bring him back, we don't know. We don't think someone like Nick Nemeth is going to be in it, because we believe Nemeth only has a match or two left to do, probably two. But he's saving himself for Tanahashi, and it feels like unless they strike a new deal, that Tanahashi's going to have to take that global belt back off of him. But, you know, I don't know about Jack Perry in the G1. It's very possible, but it's not up to them, is it? If they decide it's time to bring Jack Perry back because they have something in mind for him, then there it is. He's under AEW contract still, whether he wants to be or not. And so
they brought him up last night on the show.
Yeah. And then so, no, I didn't watch Dynamite. I heard it was a good episode. That's not a knock on Dynamite. I just didn't see it.
Throwaway line, but I believe it was Matt Jackson on the way down to the ring, spoke right into the camera and said, "Hey, scapegoat, love your work." So you we're doing that fourth wall break, whatever thing. Yeah. So, Young Buck executives with a rogue wrestler on their little coterie of talent seems like a match made in heaven. So you don't know. He may not even be available at that point, but I don't know. It would be great for his experience. I don't expect him to go like advance to the next round or anything like that. But, you know, it would legitimize Jack Perry in a way if he goes through the G1 and he comes back and everyone's like, yeah, this guy went through the G1. He spent 6 months in Japan and he's a completely different guy. You know, I think that has done wonders for a lot of people, and he's maximizing it way more than Nemeth is. He's maximizing it way more than Riddle is at this point. And I don't know if that's a low bar to clear, but he's clearing it.
And in Nemeth's defense, I mean, Nemeth signed with TNA. I mean, that's his main priority, is that he's a TNA wrestler, and then he's doing the New Japan the entire idea was four matches. Basically.
Sure, but that's all well and good.
He was never supposed to tour with him.
I was talking with somebody the other day, and I'm thinking about Nemeth, and I'm like, he's in real danger at Windy City of getting outshined by Mustafa Ali. Mm-hmm. You know, like, wherever he's going, and he wants to make this statement that he's a different wrestler, and he's doing the press tours, and he's doing all this thing, but when he gets in the ring, you know, he's still the mid-card guy from WWE, and that's what I see. And he's not redefined himself despite the opportunities. And I don't know if Ishii is the guy to really bring it out of him, but if it's not, we're going to be having a different conversation about the guys that are taking the opportunity and running with it, and the guys that tried, but for whatever reason weren't connected.
Yeah, there is a Gaijin with belts fever going on right now. Yeah. We mentioned it, and it might get that fever might rise a little bit before it lessens.
The temperature will get boiling.
But they have options
with Perry. My blood.
They have options with Perry though, because they could, if AEW is going to say, "Hey, thanks for keeping an eye on him for a little while. We're going to take him back now." They could just have Shota beat him at Riot and get the win.
I do expect Shota to beat him.
Yeah, he's going to be the biggest Perry, the biggest heel in Chicago because of the whole punk thing and everything else, right? So, and he's going to play into that. He already has started to. And it's going to have a good chunk of heat to it. And if they are going to keep him for a while, if he's going to be involved in Dominion or if he's going to be involved with the G1 down the road, you can string that out. You can have it be some sort of different kind of finish, but you have the option of just beating him and saying, "Well, Shota vanquished the guy." You know, that's just the classic. The foreigner came in, messed with the Japanese.
It always felt when he showed up at Battle in the Valley with that AEW contract that the end game was this program at Windy City Riot. And for whatever it was that he managed to do, if this is it, I thought he did a great job. And I'm saying I would like to see more of him. And I don't necessarily think that that was how I felt when he came in. And I think he walked in, he committed. And, you know, we had those moments where he almost missed a pin. And, you know, he a little bit of the language barrier and the goof. But he's a better wrestler now than he was when he got to Japan. And that's where I'm at on it.
Okay. Well, anyway, we had that. So the G1, there's a lot of options right there. But I do think it sort of leans toward a 32-person tournament there. So,
do you have any early predictions on a winner?
Oh, Lord.
I know. Bring that one on you.
No, not right. Not yet. I've got thoughts on it. I mean, there are the basic people that you think could be real strong contenders. The same folks that I think everybody else thinks of, the various faction leaders and all that. I think Zach will be in it pretty late. I don't know if they want to go with Zach on top in the Tokyo Dome. That's always the key. You got to look at the lineups, because one of those guys is going to main event the Tokyo Dome. And so who on that list is the guy that can do something like that? And the question is, who's going to be the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion when we get to the G1, which is by no means a guaranteed a thing. But you know, as far as early predictions go, I'm having a hard time reading tea leaves on it right now until I know who's in it.
I would go in no particular order. Favorite would be Zach Sabre Jr.
Mm.
David Finlay.
Yeah, Finlay's going to be in there. He's going to be
Shota Umino.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it depends on where we go from the middle of the summer with Dominion and Forbidden Door. You know, if we got a heel crowd, or yeah, can Zach bring in 10,000?
Can Zach bring in a crowd? And
it depends on how you build it and who his opponent is.
Well, yeah, and you know, the thing is, it's possible, but boy, you got to sell tickets. And Zach is a great. We all know Zach is a wonderful, wonderful wrestler.
Look, I know it's not going to draw if you do Evil versus Zach Sabre Jr. for the IWGP title at the Tokyo Dome. That's not happening.
No,
you know,
no.
It seems a lot more likely that Zach Sabre Jr. would have a spotlight match near the top of the card with a dream opponent than it would be challenging for the IWGP title. Right now, he is not positioned in New Japan the way that they want that to be. And I get that, but it really just depends how long they're willing to wait, because the next guy, big babyface, to win the IWGP should either be Yota Tsuji, should either be Shota Umino, or it should be Dark Horse Yuya Uemura and main eventing the Tokyo Dome in a dream, in like vanquishing somebody of the top order.
Shingo Takagi. But the other one, I would put Shingo out there too as a serious contender for it. A couple of things from Venkin and Dunstan that I think are mentioned. He said, if Zach can't, I doubt Finlay. Yeah, that's a fair point as well. So again, do you put Finlay in that spot? It feels like he could use, say, a big win in the Tokyo Dome before he main events it. And that could be a way to go with that. Now,
didn't Venkin mentioned a big win in the Tokyo Dome?
Well, yes. But, you know, again, it still doesn't feel like he's the main event Tokyo Dome guy, does it? I mean, he just lost to Nemeth right away. He's got I think there's still some work to do there. Venkin mentioned
they have some rehabilitation, because it seemed like he was supposed to go a lot farther in the cup, and that was supposed to build some credibility.
Venkin mentions, would Mox sell a Tokyo Dome? Yes, I think he would against the right guy. I absolutely think he would against the right guy. So that's going to go into our discussion of Windy City Riot next week, which, of course, that's going to be the main gist of our show next time. But that is a thought, isn't it? Because there could be the safety blanket of Tetsuya Naito is a draw against Moxley doing it again in the Dome. That's a possibility. Again, we haven't seen, they will not have seen that match in Japan. It will have been in Chicago. Yes, you can watch it, but mm-hmm. The idea of going to see it in the Dome, that's a possibility. That puts Moxley as world champion, of course, puts in the interesting possibility of Shota coming through, right? Because we all feel like eventually Shota has to overthrow the sensei here, right? You know, that's the whole, you know, possibility. So Dunstan says
either Shingo, overthrow the Shota, sensei, or do what the sensei couldn't.
Shingo, there it is. Shota, Zach, and Tsuji, according to Dunstan, are the options. And and Dunstan says, I realized Kato Kiyomiya would. That would be a bold move to take a Noah guy and put him in that spot. I would be surprised. I'm not saying he couldn't do it. He's perfectly capable.
Hold the thermometer out and find the cold day in hell when that happens.
Venkin says, I will die on the hill that Shota should beat Mox. Yes, he should someday. Absolutely he should someday. Yeah, I think he will.
I there's entirely a possibility that is a match that happened if somebody wins the title upcoming.
Shota might be the guy to end Moxley's long unbeaten streak in New Japan. It's not, he's not unbeaten in New Japan because he lost a few times in the G1, but he doesn't lose often. And I think it's been a very long time since he took a real loss, because what, Ospreay got pinned in the dome, right? That was the
narratively. So, if that happened, it will have to be a while from now, because if Moxley wins at Windy City, he's only getting pinned once, and that's for like a dethroning.
Yeah,
and so if it were to happen, I think it happens at a different point of the Ascension, and I would not even rule out. And it would be, I would forgive a lot of booking if they did this. Bring Moxley in for the G1 and put them face to face with each other in the G1 and show to beat them in one of the qualifying matches of the G1.
Boy, I don't know if I give that away.
If Shota could win the whole G1, and on the way he beat Moxley.
Oh, if he wins the G1, he definitely shouldn't beat Moxley in it then. Those should be two different things. Those should be two different chapters.
What if it's the final?
Moxley's not going to be in the G1.
If there is a whole thread that you could follow here, and if Moxley's you not have Shota win, like go to Tokyo Dome in the title match. At some point, you need to get that Moxley match out of the way. If he's in the G1, you can easily make that one of the final boss matches for Shota on the way to challenge.
I don't have inside information on this, but I can't fathom that AEW gives up Moxley for another month.
They have so many new toys. Moxley wrestled one match for AEW in the last month.
Yeah, but he's a constant presence on the show. Constant presence.
No, he hasn't been on the show in a month. I'm literally telling you, he has not been on the show.
Sure about that?
Yes.
I think
they had one match, but he went to CMLL. He's coming to Japan this weekend. He's going to Windy City. He's got no program for Revolution.
He doesn't.
I do not rule out that they give him the go-ahead to go do the G1 one more time.
You know who ought to do the G1? I've been saying it for years, is Claudio. Good Lord. Absolutely. That guy should absolutely get a bunch of New Japan matches like that in. My goodness. That'd be fantastic.
There are so many cards coming up for AEW, so many mouths to feed. And if they're like, hey, you want to go to the G1 instead? Like, this is the year where, like, they're bleeding upper mid-card talent. Mm-hmm. And they don't have enough room to book them properly. And, you know, if Blackpool Combat Club were to just kind of, like, be away while Danielson does his final dream match and Nigel McGuinness come, you know, Wembley, and they build that program up. Meanwhile, the rest of the Blackpool Combat Club is off doing their thing. I think everybody wins for that.
Nigel is holding out hope for, boy, he wants that match worse than anything.
They are laying the groundwork. Pretty hard on that one. Laying
the groundwork. He's practicing. You know, he's not laying the groundwork. There's an entire skyscraper erected on that site.
Johnny Appleseeded the ground for the last 18 months, and now there are trees sprouting everywhere.
I tell you what, it's going to be anticipated. Did you see their original ROH matches against each other?
Yeah.
Fantastic. It was pretty great. I hope Nigel can still do that. You know, like, it's been a while and things, but if it's even 75% of that, better than most things going in wrestling right now.
Other than that, with the G1, it's the same guys. You know, like, there are a lot of guys that, like, you could theoretically argue could win it, but there's like four that are like in that 50% or greater chance to win it, I would say. And then there's a couple of the young guys that I would put at 45 to 55%. And that's the sweet spot of, like, got to be one of these young guys. I don't know what they're going to do, though. And
I keep kicking it around, like, the whole Hantai, G.O.D., you know, just babyface section. Mm-hmm. Hikuleo is still the top contender out of that group, really.
Absolutely. I mean, they could work with Goto and Ishii, but Hikuleo, like, I've said it, it's my signature line, find a big guy that a promotion loves as much as New Japan loves Hikuleo.
But I think Ishii and even Goto at this point are around the 500 level in the G1 these days, the way they're booked. Like, they either go 5-4 or 4-5. If it's a 7-match tournament, it's 3-4, 4-3. That's just the way they seem to book those guys right now. So, and Dunstan just said there's so many talents in AEW not doing anything. And they cut a few people, which, by the way, just as mentioned, our sibling show, Power Bombshells, will be back on Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And they've been off for personal reasons. We mentioned that a little bit, and our thoughts are still with Sam and her family. But they will be back, and Sam has thoughts, people. She has some thoughts about some of these AEW cuts, about some of the shows that are going on this weekend.
Mel has
a lot to say about some of the events that, that are coming up this week. So make sure you tune in to see them again. It's been a couple of weeks, and a lot's gone on since they've been here, and they have a lot to say.
She'll probably be talking about some Work Horseman drama, and good news for Anthony Henry. He'll be back, so that's good stuff there. While we're at it, can we just do the Fight Game Media plugs and all that?
Let's do that, and then we'll hit this Sakura Genesis card hard.
Got it. We are members of the Fight Game Media Network. On our shows, on the YouTube channel, you can find the Dynamite Show, sometimes the Five Star Joshi Show, Power Bomb Shows, ourselves speaking of strong style, Dynamite Shows on Wednesday night, Power Bomb Show Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, depending on your time zone. And you can find us Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. We also have a audio feed, both dedicated to speaking of strong style, if you look on all your major audio podcatchers. And the Fight Game Media Network has The Wrap, which is the WWE show, and they have a WWE preview coming up. In addition to that, we also have the Dynamite shows and audio feed, the Five Star Joshi shows and the audio feed, the Double G show, and I believe Observe This. In addition to that, a special new show has debuted in, involving Paul Fontaine. It's called The Joy of Wrestling, in which he brings on a guest for a half hour to talk about a match or an event or a show that brought you joy in your life. And it's kind of a return to roots with all the negativity and toxicity in the wrestling community, just kind of getting back to why we love what pro wrestling is about. And I will actually be the guest for that show. That'll be airing live on Monday night at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern.
Awesome.
So if you want to hear my thoughts about what I find joy in wrestling, you might be surprised by the story. I'm planning on getting a little personal.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Well, that'll be fun to listen to. So yeah, there's a lot of things going here. We're going to take a look at, by the way, we had a King of Pro Wrestling title match this past week.
Oh God.
So we got to cover it real quick before we get into Genesis.
Do you want to riddle Kosei Fujita review real quick?
A Kosei Fujita review?
Yeah, they had a match last week. Did you know about that?
Who are you talking about? I'm sorry. Oh, Riddle and Kosei Fujita. Yes.
Let's just knock this one out of the way real quick. They had a match. Riddle looked fine. Kosei Fujita was highly enthusiastic and working really, really hard. I don't know what's going on with Riddle, but I feel like the road has already owned him in the indies for some bit. And I'm a little concerned for the guy. The matches are going short. I don't know how long he's going to have this title. But he won, and it is leading up directly to Riddle and Zack Sabre Jr. at Windy City Riot, which has been building ever since Riddle won the title. And again, I don't have many opinions about this, so we can go to another dire portion of our show.
All right, well, let's get into this thing. So we had this in Hamamatsu. This was the King of Pro Wrestling match with Tongaloa and the Great Okan. So this was on the 31st. Now, there were some logistical issues with this match, and what we had was a three stages to this match. So the first one was a 10-minute match where each count was a point. So if you got a two count, that's 2 points. If you got a three count, 3 points, 1 point. Blah, blah, blah.
So cumulative counting within a time period.
Right. And so that first 10 minutes, what was interesting in this one, I felt like there were a couple of small missed opportunities in this one, although it picked up in the final 3 minutes. First 7 minutes were just kind of a basic wrestling match. A couple of pin attempts, but I think it was like 2-2 and late in this one. And I thought it was interesting that Great Okan got a two count fairly early, and then they fought on the outside for a while. And I thought, you know, there's something they could do with this, because the whole idea is Okan could be playing defense. Can't get a count on the outside of the ring, right? Mm-hmm. So what if Great Okan, I thought, oh, they're going to work this where Tagovailoa keeps trying to get Great O'Khan back in the ring so he can even the score or go ahead. Oh, I wish I had that imagination. breaks the count and goes back out, or they can't keep finding ways to. No, they just kind of fought on the outside the same way they always do. Anyway, it picked up during the final 3 minutes. There was a, what was it, a pumping bomb or something like that that managed to get something like a five count on Great O'Khan. And anyway, in the end, that ended up being a victory for Tagovailoa. He had the most counts in there. I'm trying to see what the final score. It doesn't matter what the final score.
It was like, I thought it was like nine to eight.
I think it was that he hit a five count and then held on to a headlock for the last minute to go ahead.
I think it was nine to eight.
So he was trailing 8-5 or 8-4 or something like that, and he got a five count. That was the key. So
a five count.
We moved on to what was supposed to be an eel eating contest. Instead, they went with gyoza. Now, gyoza is fantastic, by the way, and it's delicious in Japan. That was when I loved it too. I was wondering if there was an issue with the eel.
Like, realizing how much eel would have cost.
Or just think, like, do we want to eat eel that's been sitting around a pro wrestling locker room for an hour and a half before we eat it? Maybe not.
Do you want to eat gyoza that's been sitting around for an hour in a pro wrestling locker room?
I've had gyoza in Japan. I would eat it off the floor of a movie theater if somebody gave it. It's delicious. Okay. No, but I mean, it keeps better. So gyoza is a fried dumpling. Basically, there you go. So they ate the fried dumpling. Great O'Khan won the eating contest. They proceeded to work the bull rope match, which was the third stage of it, where you have to touch each of the four corners. The same way you work most of those matches, one guy gets a corner and he's qualified for that corner. And then the other guy fights for a while and he gets it. And they stay even toward the end, but they kept working the match, working toward getting punched in the stomach so they could act like they were about to barf because they were full of gyoza. And I brought this up last week. I just said, this is a little gutsy to eat a huge thing right in the middle of a wrestling match. As it turns out, there were no issues with that. This was not good. I mean, this wasn't good at all. To me, the eating contest was the most interesting part of the whole thing, and the most entertaining, because the wrestling just wasn't very good. I like the Great O'Khan. I think his promos are interesting. When he wrestles, I think he does well. But this Tagovailoa is a bit of a harder sell for me. I'm not impressed with his stuff since he came back, and as a singles, it's been rough. He was better with Tama Tonga.
If this is legit, Tagovailoa and Great O'Khan coming up with the stipulation, I have nothing else that I can conclude than Great O'Khan is a kind-hearted meathead. Like, he just doesn't have the imagination for, like, coming up with, like, good stipulations and all this stuff. Because these are all really, like, oh, I got it, and this, and this, and this. And you're just like, no, but you're got the title. We're giving you a shot. We'll see what the fans think. And I would not recommend this match to anybody. I was hoping it would be better than this. I was watching this match, and you know when you tap on your iPad to see how much time is left on a match?
wasn't moving fast enough for you, was it?
Happened, and I think I got to a point during the show where I was like, the architecture in this place is really interesting.
It was a nice building.
It was a really nice building. But when you're watching a New Japan show and you start noticing how nice the walls look and the way the match looks in the spacious arena, you're like, that's not great.
As a venue nerd, you just made my heart sing right there. Vankin has something to say, by the way, about Paul Fontaine's concept. He said, fun thing you say, a joy moment in wrestling today, 3 years ago, was Natsupoi versus Tom Nakano for the Wonder Belt. And I was thinking how things can change in a few years. Yeah, indeed. A lot of those.
Check out the show on Monday night at 8 p.m. Pacific, my man.
Poi is a cosmic angel now. The most cosmic angel-y of all the cosmic angels. And she wasn't back. I think she was still with Donna Del Mundo back then. Anyway.
So we were talking earlier in the show about how I felt about Sakura Genesis. If this was the last show that I watched, and I actually forgot about this other show was going to be uploaded to World. So it almost was the only show I watched. I would have had not great vibes going into Sakura Genesis. But I will tell you, I thought the show the next day was really good.
Oh, the Wednesday show at Korakuen? Yeah, we're going to get into some of the angles that came out of that. Now, the show itself, there was some good stuff. And as we go through the Genesis card, we'll refer to some of those. And don't worry, Dunston, we do have your questions coming lined up here, too. We're going to talk about those as we get to those matches. So for Sakura Genesis, the show will begin with a Frontier Zone match, and that's going to be Toru Yano and Tomohiro Ishii teaming with Bolton Oleg, or Oleg Bolton, depending on which name system you want to use. That's the Bolton Oleg, of course, Japanese system. They will be wrestling Chicharito Shoki, Takuro Niki, and Ayato Yoshida, and that is from the 2AW promotion in Japan. So, again, a look at some people from smaller promotions getting a shot to have an opening match on a New Japan card. So very little doubt that one of those three on the AAW side will do the job for Yano, Ishii, or Oleg, but we'll get a look at them and see what they got. And I kind of enjoy these Frontier Zones. It's fun to see new people.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it too. I kind of expect Ishii or Oleg to appear victorious here. So what promotion are they from?
2AW. AAW, but it's referred to as 2AW.
All right. Well, I hope that they show some promise. Has there been a point where some of the Frontier Zone people have gotten more opportunity within New Japan as a result of doing these shows, or has it just kind of been a one and done so far?
It's I think we've seen some of the guys like Shun Skywalker has started off in one of these and then has made some more appearances, and I believe Tamayo has come back in other forms. Yeah,
because I feel like it's just a matter of time before one of these guys will really break out.
Dunston is spitting fire here. Frontier Zone equals talent poaching. You think maybe so? I don't know. I want
it's
them
all
to bring
together
back
in Japan at this point. It's a coalition.
I want them to bring back the guy that was dressed like a volcano. That's all I ask. And by the way, Active Advanced Pro Wrestling 2AW. It is a it's Takamichi Noku's group.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was originally called Kaientai Dojo back then. So that's Taka's
group. I get why they would have called it that.
Yeah, there you have it. So that's his gang. So these are some of his kids. So we'll see what, Taka's been a terrific trainer over time. There's a lot of good wrestlers there that have come from Taka's group. So you remember when there used to be Kaientai Dojo Young Lions that would appear on New Japan every once in a while? That's been a while, but they did that for a while. There was a Kaientai Young Lion for a minute.
There was a point in time, I don't remember it too well, but I know what you're talking about, and it felt like it was just kind of there and then quietly disappeared, kind of like Gideon Gray did last year.
Yeah, so thinking they all use the Michinoku driver as a finisher. It's the Michinoku driver is the Boston Crab of the Kaientai Dojo. Everyone uses that in all their matches, maybe. What do you think? It's not a bad idea. It's the Boston Crab, right? You got to do
it. You know where they came from.
Yeah, you always know. That's the calling card. So anyway, that's the first Frontier Zone match, and we'll see what kind of talent they have on that one. So after that, and this is again Sakura Genesis early morning on Saturday, and then we have Ryusuke Taguchi and El Desperado facing an interesting team, Zack Sabre Jr. and Kosei Fujita. And you know, it's the reason it's intriguing to me is I expect Fujita to be part of the Super Juniors. Mm-hmm. And Desperado just did a job for Taiji Ishimori. Taguchi is probably going to be in Super Juniors. So what we're seeing is a lot of New Japan setting up people because with Sho and Yo as fighting over the championship belt, right? Mm-hmm. We're going into Best of Super Juniors. So either Sho or Yo will be the champion going into that tournament. To me, what that tells you is everyone is thinking Desperado or Hiromu, right? It's Desperado and Hiromu. Well, both of those guys were pinned in Korakuen Hall on Wednesday. Bushi pinned Hiromu, and Taiji Ishimori pinned Desperado. Now, I don't want to make too big a deal out of that. Desperado and Hiromu will certainly be top contenders for Best of the Super Juniors. But I like that they are thinking ahead and starting to make others look like more of a threat. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an intelligent move right here, because I think everyone's default setting is Desperado and Hiromu until we're told differently. Mm-hmm. But so it doesn't hurt to see Ishimori, who is a legitimate contender, get a win over Desperado. It doesn't hurt to see Bushi sneak one in on Hiromu right here and plant some seeds of doubt. So we have three guys in this, and Zach, who's on another plane and basically is headed toward top Gaijin level, we think, as Super Juniors guys. So, again, I'm not trying to make a mountain out of a molehill on this one, but I'm a little bit curious to see who does the job in this one. I suggest probably Taguchi, but that could mean Fujita getting a pinfall victory, which he doesn't often get so much. So maybe that's just wishful thinking.
Fujita pinning Taguchi seems likely. I don't see Zack Sabre Jr. involved in losing in any way, shape, or form, but I do see Fujita losing, possibly. You're not wrong about the Desperado losing streak, the Hiromu losing streak, potentially Akira losing streak moving forward, since he was supposed to be positioned pretty strong after that big cage match and everything.
Speaking of guys having breakout moments, can we get some soap for this? I mean, the worst skin in Japan is the Francesco Akira.
He gets down and dirty on that mat, man.
Oh my goodness, somebody help that man.
But there is a lot of potential with some of these guys coming in the best of the Super Juniors. Low key, it has an opportunity to really be great this year, and you are not wrong in that they are laying some groundwork with matches like these, setting it up. Because I wouldn't be surprised if we get the list of entrants for the best of the Super Juniors with this show.
Yeah, I think that might very well happen. Colin is here. Glad to see you, Colin, of course. And he says, I am sorry I'm late. I was watching Bloodsport X. Ooh, tell us what the highlights were in the comments, please. We'll read them out here. Venkin's asking the same thing, too. Anything? That's a card that I was kind of getting. They have, you know, Shayna Baszler's on it. That's one I think Suzuki's.
Or Minoru Suzuki and Royce Isaacs that we just
Yeah, it was a Josh Barnett against, was it Nemeth? Was it Nemeth that doing it? There was one, and I think Nemeth is at least on the card, and so is, Johnny Bloodsport. You know, John Hannigan is doing it right there. He says Thatcher and Fisher, Baszler, Slamovich, those were worth the time, huh? Yeah, I believe it. Good.
I may check those out later today. What are you going to watch this weekend, by the way, Steven? You going to watch anything besides the Current Genesis?
Oh, I mean, obviously Mania, of course, but I don't know if I'm going to squeeze the NXT show in or not, and I'm not sure I'm going to make that a priority. I might try to get a look at the Stardom stuff, but again, I don't know when I'm going to have. We're also, it's a busy time in Austin too, because we are coming up on Jeremy the total lunar eclipse. Austin, my city here, is in the ominous sounding path of totality.
Yeah,
Sounds like a Star Trek thing, doesn't it? I feel like the Borg is coming, but instead they're just going to block out the sun on Monday, and all the crazies are here thinking the apocalypse is coming. So it's going to be awesome. And there's a lot of music festivals and things. I have a soccer game to go to because Austin FC has a home game. God rest our souls. And then, but there's a lot of music shows going. I'm seeing the Secret Sisters tomorrow, and then there's some other stuff. So it's going to be a very busy.
Look at you.
Well, it's the end of the world as we know it, and I'm feeling good. So we're going to check this whole thing out. And apparently, somewhere in the afternoon on Monday, it's going to go basically totally dark in the middle of the afternoon. It's going to be freaky. So, Colin's saying the Stardom show sucked. Oh, no. I hate to hear that.
We got one person saying the Stardom main event was good. We got another one saying the Stardom show sucked. I've heard mixed reviews. Some people said the show was rushed. Some people said the main event. The main event were pretty good.
And Nemeth, Speedball Mike Bailey was Nemeth's opponent. So there you go. Speedball and Nemeth would be an intriguing one, I'll bet. Yeah.
There's a point where it's like these are all boutique shows, right?
Yeah.
And I love my wife. I have a job. There are things that like I realized that I was talked into splitting Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor with somebody, so I'm gonna watch that show. And that should be my Friday consumption. I'm going to have to work on Saturday morning and then figure out the Current Genesis throughout the day. But I'm going to my buddy Dave's house for Mania on Saturday and then probably finish the Current Genesis that night and or the next morning, depending on exactly how long I want to punish myself by watching wrestling that day. And then maybe Sunday I'll watch Damian Priest cash in a Money in the Bank briefcase and watch Cody Rhodes win the title. And if those two things happen, I'll be a happy man.
And Scott Edwards said the best Stardom match will be on Ring of Honor. And then that That one of the tag match that's part of the Supercard of Honor does look like on paper it's going to be very, very good. So that's tough to hear that the show wasn't very good, though, from the ECW arena.
It was $25, and I was like, no. Do I? And I was like, no, I can't.
It's a hell of a weekend, and obviously now the Bloodsport's happened, Stardom has happened, the festivities have begun, so to speak, in mm-hmm. Philadelphia. And I don't know if you heard the interview with Nick Khan on the Town podcast, where he talked business. One of the things that Nick Khan, as the WWE executive, said was that this is the last WrestleMania that was not booked under his right. watch. And he doesn't mean book as in storylines. He means like when they set the date. And he was just like, no more outdoor shows up north in early April. So what I'm hoping is, Jeremy, that maybe some of this stuff will drift down toward Texas again, mm-hmm. and we'll get a little bit better weather, as if they want to do either indoors or nicer weather and more southern. And maybe I can get this, especially if Stardom is coming around and we're seeing some of this blood sports stuff. I'd love to go. I don't want to go to Mania because I've been to a WrestleMania in a football stadium and you can't see anything. You end up watching the monitor the entire time.
Did you go to Dallas 32?
No, I went to Indianapolis, WrestleMania 8. I'm an old man. Okay, I've been to WrestleMania 2, 8, and 13.
I've been to 21, 28, 30, 31, 32. And I think I might have gone to one after that. I definitely went to New York, but I didn't go to Mania that year. I went there and I saw Okada beat Jay White for the title. Yeah. And,
yeah. So I do the peripheral stuff. Like I would love to go to a Bloodsport show. I think they regularly put interesting lineups together for that. If Stardom is coming annually, I'd love to go to that and things. Yeah. So I really
cut my teeth on Dragon Gate shows going indie back in 2009 when I went to Miami for Rock and Cena. I went to saw Gargano and Chuck Taylor for the first time wrestling Dragon Gate at the WrestleCon, early WrestleCon shows.
Now you can tell it's WrestleMania week, and our brains are just scattered. We're way off track here.
There is stuff to talk about in New Japan, but it's kind of been a slow week.
Yeah, a little bit. Well, okay. Well, let's get back to this card, though. Let's talk about it. So, now we've got through two matches. Second match is Bushi and Hiromu Takahashi teaming up against Ghetto and David Finlay. So we would imagine that's probably Ghetto doing a job again to protect everybody else in that one. I could also see Finlay just getting a pin on Bushi here.
Yeah, I see Finlay rehabilitating Finlay to be dangerous again. I think they are intent on making that happen.
Third match will feature a person that I am predicting here on this show will make his G1 debut this year. And I think Callum Newman is going to be in the G1. He's moved to Japan. He's bulking up. He is all in on his New Japan career, and I think it'll be rewarded with the G1 berth this year. Just a little prediction out of the gate. He will be teaming with Great Okan, all hail, and Jeff Cobb against Doki, Yuya Uemura, and Sonata in what could only be called a keep busy match.
I was just thinking this looked like we don't currently have any plan for any of you guys this exact moment match.
And see,
it's going to be fun. Don't get me wrong. Kanata and Yuya Uemura going against Callum Newman. Newman looked great against Ishii a couple of days ago. He's motivated. This is going to be a fun match, but it feels completely inconsequential.
I am deeply worried that Uemura is going to beat Great Okan and we have our next King of Pro Wrestling challenger. I just hope not. I just don't give me that.
Why not? Who cares?
I don't want Yuya tied up with that nonsense. I just
do it now and get it out of the way. You know, like a lot of these guys, there's so little going on until the G1. You know, what match does it really feel like Yuya would be slotted for a prominent singles match, even if it's the King of Pro Wrestling? Maybe he's good enough to get something out of Great O'Connor, motivated to do so, rather than put like a Taichi or an Evil or a Yujiro with him. You know, like I would rather Yuya like see what he can do and see what New Japan can entrust him with, even on a low-level title feud like that.
And Venkin mentions, give Hiromu a win for next week since he's facing Ali. That's an interesting question. Yeah. Is Mustafa Ali going to be in Best of the Super Juniors?
Probably.
I would like that. I'd be all in favor of that. And if so, who will be the X Division champion at that point?
There are a lot of questions there, but legitimately, Mustafa Ali way more interesting and viable
as
an outside talent coming into New Japan than a lot of these other guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Next up, we have this one. This is a three-way. This should be fantastic. Really, I don't see how this match misses. Kevin Knight and Kushida versus Catch 2-2, Francesco Akira and TJP versus Clark Connors and Drilla Maloney for the IWGP Junior Tag Team titles. Now, to me, it doesn't really matter who wins this match. Now, I'm not trying to minimize it, but the junior tag titles are ones that have historically bounced around a lot. So it's not about establishing anything or like these. This title is one that ricochets around, pardon the pun. But with this one, you know, you have a bunch of guys who are going to be in that tournament there, Best of the Super Juniors again. It could go any direction they want to. You can make a case for any of these guys holding it because there are going to be a lot of shows in North America. So the Jet Setters aren't out of the question. There are chances for this thing to be defended in the United States. Connors is also based in the U.S. So is Perkins. Mm-hmm. You know, Maloney is British and Akira is Italian, but you know, either way. So I'm leaning more toward either the War Dogs keeping or the Jet Setters winning. Just because of these North American shows coming, I think Catch 2-2, a bit of the underdog, probably won't be factored into the, well, they could be factored into the finish. It's one way to get the belts off the War Dogs without them doing a job. But either way, this match is here to be the entertaining air show more than it is a big twist in a story as to who has belts. So its job is just going to be to steal this show, isn't it? I mean, that's really why they're here, is to make the most spectacular three-way they can and have everyone talking about them when they leave.
So the day before, they had this match, which was the Jet Setters and Ishii versus Catch 2-2, Callum Newman. This was probably one of the best matches on the show the day before. And afterwards, the War Dogs came out. Dan Maloney all bandaged up and looking worse for wear, but hanging out. And they come out and, you know, they all get in each other's faces. And what it comes out to be is that this match now is going to be a tornado match, meaning everybody's going to be at the ring at the same time. And as a result of that, this match is going to be nuts. These guys are just going to be going all out, spot fest, here, there, everywhere, getting a pin. 10, 15 minutes. I don't know what it's going to be, but I think every one of these guys is highly motivated. This is one of Kevin Knight's first big matches coming back. Kushida, one of his first big matches in Japan in a good long time. Dan Maloney's probably chomping at the bit after 2 months of not wrestling. Clark Connors is all healed up. This has the making of some really good stuff to come out of it.
And that gauntlet match, by the way, it was a gauntlet match where those two trios teams faced one another. And like you said, it was great. A lot of that was Ishii and Newman, who seemed to be magic together, actually. And then once you got the War Dogs in it, they just beat Ghetto pretty easily and quickly. That was the only thing there is that once the War Dogs got in, the match really slowed down, and then it was over with. But that initial blast there was a lot of fun, and I think Maloney is probably very intelligently saving himself for Genesis.
I got a question for you. If they had advertised based off of and all that they have done between Callum Newman and Ishii, which admittedly isn't much, they had the match in December and they've met up a couple of times. If that was the match that was advertised for Windy City rather than Nemeth and Ishii, would you be more interested?
Well, that's an interesting point. Just because I wouldn't have been had their match back in December hadn't been so great, but it was. Right. It was really great. But Nemeth and Ishii is an interesting styles clash. I haven't seen Nemeth face a guy like Ishii, so I'm curious to see how it goes. Nemeth is a good wrestler, and he's a really good athlete. So if he works an Ishii match, it could be just another side of him that we really haven't seen because no one does that in WWE.
There's a part of me that wonders if that Nemeth Ishii match somehow ends up a title match or a title switch comes out of that match between those two as a result. It may be that Tanahashi isn't even going to be ready by the time like that clock tips on Nemeth's timetable.
We'll have to see how it turns out. Right now, it's still not listed as a title match. And they kind of covered that in storyline already with Nemeth saying he wants to save his first title defense for Tanahashi.
So. You never know, though. So they could pull that angle on that night. And
after this. We have Bishamon challenging Kenta and Chase Owens for the IWGP Tag Team Championship. So again, Chase Owens and Kenta, sort of a surprise switcheroo there. Do you feel like this is going to be a course correction and we go back to Bishamon, or is there a longer term story? I'll tell you what, if Maloney and Connors lose the junior titles earlier, I like Kenta and Chase Owens' chances a lot better in this one. But what are your thoughts?
I think it helped Kenta and Chase Owens to be legitimized by beating the former champion cleanly in the ring, rather than them being transition guys to put it back on Goto and Yoshihashi. There are plenty of other guys that they could have like used to pivot that that would lose shine and probably could afford to do so. But these guys, they are kind of more at the bottom of the card right now. So bringing them up by beating the former like back-to-back-to-back World Tag League champions, highly decorated, it just seems to me like this is a retention designed to give them a little bit of legitimacy.
All right. Well, up next, we have another.
What do you think? Do you think
I think you nailed it pretty good. I also think that at this point they could just go back to Bishamon.
I mean, yeah, they totally could. Like it either direction is not going to make or break the company.
Correct. And the main story for the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team titles is TMDK this year. So it's just a matter of when they're going to kick that in. There's probably no point in doing that until after G1, because none of the focus is really going to be on it until then. They could do it at Dominion, I suppose. But so I would say either Dominion, but if not at Dominion, then just wait until after G1. You've got the tag tournament. You could do the whole thing where TMDK, you know, is going to be a big part of that. But I really feel like that's the direction they're going, because they've laid so much groundwork about TMDK being the best team to never win it. And then, you know, TMDK and Bishamon is the best tag team title match. Doesn't have to be where TMDK wins it, but it could be a very big defense for them. And I just think that's where it's going, which means Kenta and Chase can hold on to it for now.
I wouldn't say no to Dominion being the time to heat up TMDK, but we are in April, and that is June. Mm-hmm. So if you look at it and then think you've had TMDK on the lowest temperature, they're still warm, you know, in terms of New Japan, but you haven't even turned up the temperature yet. And you got to turn that temperature up on them before you get to a point that they're going to be ready and considered viable again. They are the next in line, but they still need to be cooked. You know, like they still got to start cooking, and they haven't done any of that. And I don't know when and if they're going to do it, given that we got Duntaku in May, maybe.
And then
we'll have Dominion. So one show to heat them up doesn't feel great. It feels like you need a little bit more time to let them cook this year.
All right. After that, we have another title match. A lot of titles. We have Sho versus Yo for the junior heavyweight title. Now, the match they had in Corican Hall. So they actually had a fairly entertaining tag match right there, where Yo ended up getting the best of Sho, beat him, which helped this whole thing. This, to me, though, is a match where Yo did a ventriloquism act with Sho afterwards, which is pretty amusing, where he quote-unquote promised that there would be no interference and there would be no we were going to get the honorable match, where they were going to do their Roppongi 3K outfits again. We'll see what they do with it, but we've talked about how this one has the potential to be either really, really good if they decide to just wrestle, or really, really awful if they want to lean into the House of Torture and side of Sho and the goofy side of Yo that we have seen, where he spent most of that battle royal at Wrestle Kingdom laying on the top rope motionless. I also feel like Sho's probably going to win this, probably through crook rather than hook, because Yo has dominated the psychological warfare leading up to this thing. Yes. I mean, every step of the way, he has won the psychological warfare with Sho about stealing the title and faking him out with it and hiding behind the Yoshinoya banners and everything else in the back. And then even when he gets caught doing that, he gets a low blow in on Sho and escapes. And I just feel like this is set up for Sho to do something particularly low and dirty and come out of this with his belt and into Super Juniors. That's where I'm leaning on this, just because it's been so dominant from Yo.
This, and you can correct me if you think that there's been another opportunity, but this is the most high-profile feud for both of these guys in God knows how long.
Well, since they feuded with each other.
Yeah, 3 years ago.
I remember watching the show
last summer with his gear, walking through, like, some of these tours, and it just looked like he was checked out. Like, he was just not feeling it. And since then, whether it's the right call or not, they have put a lot of emphasis on the House of Torture. And they put the title on Sho, despite all of us thinking what a terrible idea it was at the time. And you know what? It's been fun. You know, it hasn't lit business on fire, but this is a fun, compelling feud. And at the side of Yo that is able to come out and has been engaging with the backstage comics and in the ring and at Corkin Hall running through the stage as Sho's supposed to be coming out. The whole deal has been fun and fine. And when it comes to the time that they get in the ring, I got no doubt that these two are going to put on a great match in the middle of this show, because again, this is how if they don't, what trust does the company have on them? Because this is the biggest opportunity they've been given in a very long time. And so make or break time kind of thing.
Here's my counter argument to that one. They might not be asked to have a great match, because if they are just going to do gimmick and schmaz and interference and ref bump and wacky Yo, then it might be a Toni Storm situation where we all know she can wrestle, but she chooses not to and just do goofy stuff in character. So if they lean into wacky Yo and they lean into House of Torture Sho, this could really be rotten. And on the other hand, if they decide to wrestle each other, they could. To me, it is odd a little bit that they have just gone back to it this way, because last time it was a blood feud. You know, Yo had gone through a losing streak and Sho acted like he was behind him still, and then he turned on him and all that. Then, you know, Yo was down in the depths and then made a run to the Super Junior Finals on a winning streak, that type of thing. And part of that story was him getting back to Sho. Then they laid off each other for a good long time, almost like over a year. Now they come back to it and it's a comedy thing. They're just doing wacky comedy. So, you know, I just think that they might lean into that side of it, and then we're not going to get the great match between these two.
They definitely could. The only thing that gives me confidence is that I felt like this has been one of the most high-profile, concentrated builds to any match that they have given effort to in the last 3 weeks. Like, they have legitimately put work throughout the cup in the chase of Yo having the title and Sho trying to get it, and making you care about the match that they have. And I can't say that they've done that particularly well with Tonga Lo and Great O'Conn or a couple of these other matches. I think this has more interest to me than Evil's match on this card. Like, I'm more invested. I feel like I know the outcome to this one better than I know the outcome on the Evil one. But if you're to tell me which one I'm more invested in based off of the effort and the build, I would say I'm more interested in.
Well, let's take a look at that Evil match.
That one? Okay, we'll find that.
Yeah, let's go ahead. We're going to jump ahead here real quick since we're on it. And Dunst is saying, I don't have faith in that match. Venkin thinks that Shingo will save us. So, you know, Shingo is a great worker. He is one of the very, very best in the world. He is challenging Evil for the never open weight title. And I do think that Shingo will be able to pull a really good match out of Evil. They could absolutely go with Shingo as an ever open weight champion right now. I wouldn't blame him for doing so. They could also just keep the House of Torture shenanigans going with evil. That's the thing about House of Torture is, even when you sit there and you just go, this is the time when the babyface should rise up and get the victory, they never have to do that with House of Torture because they have all the interference and the weapons and everything else at their disposal. So they can beat guys without taking them off a pedestal or lowering them down the card, so to speak. So plus, Shingo is getting dangerously close, Jeremy. I was thinking about this, to that Ishii level where he's almost bulletproof in the fans' eyes. Like, you can beat Ishii all day, every day, and we still love him and still get behind him. And Shingo's almost dangerously close to that spot. Not necessarily a good spot to be if you're going to be a champion someday, because they tend to use you to establish everybody else. So I'm leaning a little bit toward another retention right here from Evil, but if you decided to go with Shingo Takagi as the never open weight champion, I think he's maybe the best example on the card of what that belt could be, getting back to that BMF title phase of it, which I always thought was the never open weight title's true destination when it's on a heavyweight.
I'm a little bit of a Debbie Downer on this one, and I'll tell you why. Last July, we got our G1 bracket, right? And I looked at you and I said, that C bracket is going to be a banger. And it had Evil, and it had Shingo, and it had Hanare, and it had Tama Tonga, and it had all
Ishii
these guys.
And Goto, right? Ishii and Goto Ishii, were in there. It was the bruiser bracket.
It was awesome. And these were all fresh matchups. And we were going through it, and we were running down, and these were just great. It's fucking April. Okay? It's not even March. It's April. And we are still doing the carousel of the same guys from this bracket fighting over the same title that was in that bracket when Finley had it, and then he dropped it to Tama Tonga, and it's just been the same guys, Shingo, Tama Tonga, Evil, over and over and over again, and I'm just bored. Okay. Like, I don't care who wins it, because I want to see somebody fresh have it. You know, whether it's heel or it's babyface, if Evil wins, I'm actually a little more optimistic that somebody up and coming will beat him eventually at some point going forward. But if Shingo has it, I'm confident that we're going to have great never open weight matches until they find the guy that they want him to lose it to. It seems to me, well, go ahead.
No, I understand what you're saying and the boredom. I think there's two directions for this belt that would work. They're taking neither of them at the moment, but we've mentioned that, Venkin said one for Tama Tonga, we wouldn't be in this mess. And that did throw a wrench in things, but they've gone with Evil with it. And it's a fair point that maybe it's a little bit tired seeing these same guys wrestle each other for it. But
these guys are great. Like, I won't discount the contributions that Evil and Shingo like bring, but we've gone on the carousel one too many times without taking a new trip on a new ride.
I offered up the idea a while ago that they should lean into the open weight aspect of the never open weight title. Sure. And maybe somebody like Desperado or Hiromu Takahashi is the person that I really promoted as who should go and take this belt and run with it and do something different with it. I would have been very much in favor of that. But if it's on a heavyweight, I feel like it's only role. If you have the world heavyweight champion, the global champion is the guy that appears all over the planet and could be a gaijin or whatever, global ambassador type of thing. You have the what's basically a high speed title, the TV title, everything's got to be quick. This could be the BMF thing. If it's on a heavyweight, if it's on a junior heavyweight, then it becomes kind of something else, but it could use a fresh coat of paint. But
Hikuleo, Hiromu, there are guys that you could put on it if you wanted to have an imagination and move forward with it, but it's the same crop and the same cut and caliber upper mid card guys that protect the sanctity of the title rather than using the title to elevate people who could really grow from it. Like, hell, have Zack Sabre Jr. win that title and then be the stepping stone to the next level. Like, I'd be okay with that.
This really, and Dunstan has it right here, this should be Shota Umino's title. I mean, he should have beaten Evil for it. And the more I see of this Shota Umino thing, the more I'm convinced of this, that, you know, that loss kind of dinged him a little bit. He might be able to get some of it back by beating Perry as long as he does.
When he lost that, I thought, man, it's IWGP or nothing with that guy. That was my takeaway. Like, all they right. have Yota Tsuji as the first guy to challenge, but now that Yota Tsuji has challenged for the IWGP, win or loss, that door is open, and any of them can challenge at any given time. And I'm just wondering if that's the route they take for, like, the G1.
Yeah. And Tsuji might be a choice for the NEVER title, too. That's a possibility. Yes, absolutely. Or Uemura, you know, like, one of those guys could be him. All right, let's go back one to that tag match we were just talking about earlier, because there's one we didn't cover. Yes, here it is. So, Shota Umino and John Moxley teaming up to face Ren Narita and Jack Perry. Now, a few ways you can go with this. I don't see the only person I could see really. Okay, pardon me. There are two ways this could absolutely go. You could either beat Shota Umino again with dirty tactics and really pour the heat on Windy City Riot, or Moxley's beating Narita with the idea of Perry's not going to take a loss right here. Shouldn't. I don't think, anyway. I think that would be a bad move to beat Perry here. You can beat Narita, especially if it's Mox, because I have a feeling that Moxley will be making more than one appearance on this show. So with that in mind, I feel like Moxley either gets the win or they pour extra gasoline on the heat and beat Shota here. But either way, this is a match to service two other things. A little bit of Windy City Riot, and a lot of Windy City Riot, actually. Both of those things are in the service of Windy City Riot, either setting up Moxley as a very strong challenger to Tetsuya Naito, or just making everybody pissed off at Jack Perry even more, so that Shota Umino's hopeful win at Windy City Riot will be the catharsis.
If I had to guess, and I'm probably wrong, I think Moxley pinned Narita.
Yeah, it feels a little bit more like that, doesn't it?
Yeah. So.
Because they could do something like the push-up bar I feel like we've seen that push-up bar so much, but they don't seem to be tired of it. But those are the two ways, I think. But I think it's more important of the two things, more important maybe for Moxley to look real strong coming out of this one going into Chicago.
Yeah, I think you and I are both on the same page that this will not be the only time that Moxley shows up on this show.
Because we think he's coming out after
the main event.
The IWGP World Heavyweight title match between Tetsuya Naito and Yota Tsuji. Now, I feel like they have given away the finish on this by getting into the whole Tsuji wants to break up the belt into two again. I just don't think they're going to do that. He wants to separate them. God knows why. His explanations don't really make any sense for why. It's so, to me, I wish he hadn't said it. Because to me, it just makes, well, they're not going to do that. And we kind of know they're not going to do that. We know it's going to be Naito versus Mox for the title. That's too juicy to give up and to just have that be a special singles match. You know, that needs to be an IWGP title match. So,
and they also have Shingo saying that he thinks Yota Tsuji is going to win this match, which is like, red alert.
Right. Point being, Yota Tsuji established himself with the New Japan Cup win as a guy who looks at home in a main event spot, in my book. I thought he did that in the finals. His job is not to win this title, but to have a really good match with Naito. I like his chances of doing so. If he does that, then he goes into G1 as somebody who you can take very, very seriously and will then have a series of strong main event performances under his belt. This is all just to get us used to seeing Yota Tsuji in big spots, because I think they have in mind keeping him there for a while. So he doesn't have to win. He just needs to have a really good match. Naito's the kind of guy he can have a really good match with. So I think Tsuji's going to come out of this stronger. I think Naito's going to come out of this with a nice win to retain his title, and then I think we're going to get the stare down with Moxley, which is the match that everybody really wants to see.
We're getting Naito and Moxley facing off before Windy City at the end of this show. It feels like it is plain to see, and I'm okay with that. I think the main goal of this match is to get the Reiwa in a position where you are comfortable seeing them in main event matchups. And Yota Tsuji being the first makes a ton of sense. He was the first really on the scene to challenge Sonata last year, so it's not completely out of the question for him to go for it again after being elevated. But we're going to start seeing the Yuya Uemuras and the Shota Uminos and the Ren Naritos in higher profile opportunities. And this is just the beginning. So While we're at it talking about this match, I want to give a shout out to Scotty Wrestling and the Five Star Joshi Show. He actually has interviews with both Yota Tsuji and Tetsuya Naito through Fightful Wrestling. You can find it on his Twitter feed, Scotty Wrestling, where he interviewed both of these guys before this match. Huge get for our guy and co-host of this show. Really proud of him. Don't forget to check that out.
And let's take a look at some of the questions that Dunson has. There are a few things we've already covered. So like I said, what are your expectations for Show versus Yo? We mentioned that earlier. Who do you hope challenges the winners of the title matches? We've kind of covered some of that as to what the future of those titles are. Are we hoping for any debuts or returns for Genesis? For this one, no. I'm really not so much expecting anything big. Eventually, they're going to have to fill that spot in the War Dogs now that Alex Coughlin has been forced into retirement. But I think we're going to see a little bit more of that at Windy City Riot, which feels like a bigger show right now than this one does. Don't you think? Or am I missing something here?
There definitely feels like this is a build-up to that one. Like it's a skipping stone off to the next show. And I was very excited about the fact that we are getting this show and that I came into it after this last like Road 2 show that I'm much more excited. But yeah, we discussed doing a post-show for Sakura Genesis and a post-show for Windy City. And yes, there were aspects of the WrestleMania that gave us a damper on doing a post-show for it, but it just didn't feel like people are as into this show as they are Windy City.
And Dunson asked, does it feel like a two-match card in terms of quality? The main event and the three-way tag are the only matches he thinks will deliver. A little bit. I mean, something might pop up and surprise us right there, but it does feel like those are the two matches that'll really be good coming out of it. And maybe some story. The Perry and Narita versus Shota and Mox has the potential to over-deliver, I think. I'll throw that one out as a possibility.
I will say that I think Desperado tag match with Zack Sabre and Kosei Fujita can over-deliver. Okay. I am optimistic about Yo and Show, okay? The tag match could be okay. The Moxley-Shota Death Riders match also has an opportunity to be okay. That Tornado match is going to be good. The IWGP, a lot of motivation is behind making sure that delivers. This match has a definite possibility to be way better than people feel about going into it.
All right. And then he asked this one. If Naito stays champion the rest of the year, so this is supposing that he beats Moxley, or at least retains against Moxley, for the rest of the year, what fresh title matches should he have in his reign? So he, after that, we'll have Dontaku, we'll have Dominion. Then we'll have the G1. And, of course, whoever beats him in the G1, and usually the champion doesn't win the G1, usually has, it's been a very long time since they've done that. Then you have the King of Pro Wrestling show in the fall, maybe one more. What fresh title matches? I'll tell you one that I would really enjoy seeing, and one I think we're going to see. I think David Finlay is going to be in that mix. Mm-hmm. That he and Naito.
Finlay and Naito, definitely.
And then somewhere in there. And then another person I would like to see, and maybe this could be the G1 win, that something's got to trip the champion up in the G1. I'd kind of like to see Naito and Kiyomiya. I think that would be intriguing.
That would be fun. Yeah. Shota, Yuya, the Reiwa, those are all fresh matches. So Finley, Shota, Yuya, Ren, Zack Sabre Jr. is definitely not a fresh match. You could throw ELP in there, do a Hikuleo. No, you can't do Hikuleo. You already did that in the G1.
Yeah.
Callum Newman could be a Naito match. You could all set these up in way, shape, or form. There are a lot of old guard that they can revisit, but it's not like there is a void of talent that Naito has never wrestled or been in the ring with. Look at your big dog.
He just walked in and made a little cameo. Gabe Kidd is another one I wouldn't mind seeing against Naito. That would be an intriguing one for him to work around too. I don't mean work around like Gabe Kidd isn't good, but that real hardcore brawling style. If he has a good match with Moxley, that has to have the New Japan front office salivating at the idea of he and Kidd, who has obviously a different presentation, but has that hardcore, intense brawling thing. That would be. So those are a couple that I think that I could be optimistic of, that maybe those are on the horizon. We'll have to see.
What else you got? Anything? You got any other questions here?
No, the only other thing, I think we got all the questions. Now, the only other thing I wanted to cover is we have had some more matches announced for Windy City Riot. Now, next week, of course, like we mentioned, is going to be our real breakdown of the Windy City Riot card. But I do want to go
episode 100 humdinger of an episode.
That's right. And we have this one, a strong survivor match between Matt Vandegrift and Zane J. That's been announced. Yeah. We have a women's tag match, Trisha Dora and Alex Windsor against Viva Van and Mina Shirakawa.
Look at Alex Windsor getting bookings.
Yeah. And then we have the NJPW Strong Women's title, Azmi from Stardom challenging Stephanie Vaquer.
Azmi?
That should be fabulous. Azmi's wonderful, and so is Vaquer, so that'll be great. Yeah. Zack Sabre and Matt Riddle, we've mentioned that one. And we still are waiting to hear who the fourth team in that Four Corners match is with Phantasmo and Hikuleo. We know a couple.
It's been confirmed. It's all four.
Oh yeah, well, who is the fourth?
I think it's West Coast Wrecking Crew.
West Coast, yeah. Well, I mean, storyline wise, makes a lot of sense.
Yes, I think Nemeth all four have been confirmed.
Nemeth, Ishii, Umino versus Perry, the no DQ tornado tag with Eddie Kingston versus Gabe Kidd and their Mystery Vortex teams.
So is that an elimination match or just first to a pinfall?
It doesn't say elimination match.
God, it would be really cool if they did a Survivor Series match.
And then Mustafa Ali and Hiromu, we don't know if it's for the X Division title yet or not. And then Moxley versus Naito, and of course, we don't know if that's a title match or not.
Like I said, if Mustafa Ali has a better night than Nick Nemeth at Windy City, that's going to say a lot.
Let's see, we got some comments here. I think Gabe is getting the strong belt when they decide to do that ring match.
Maybe at Resurgence in May.
Makes a lot of sense. And then Venkin says, Alex Windsor, Windy City Riot, almost like Ospreay could be there.
Jeez, are we doing that again? You know what? If that happened, I'm giving you all the credit in the world. I do not see Tony letting his new toy out the door before that Danielson match.
And Colin just kind of gives away the result of the Loser Leaves E match this Friday. Yeah, it kind of does. You're right. Yeah, I mean, you never know. You never know, but yeah, it feels that way, doesn't it? But yeah, that's the Windy City Riot card. I tell you what, I'm looking forward to it. That'll be a lot of fun.
So there was one last thing I forgot to plug earlier, and if you missed our show last week, Filthy Tom came on.
Yeah.
And he talked about the Windy City Riot match, and he spent 30 minutes of his time. He wasn't able to join the show, and we found out later on it was because he was commentating on the Stardom show as this show was on the air. So totally get why that was a priority. So I'm really appreciative that he made time last week. Yeah. You can find that on YouTube. Just look up Filthy Tom, Speaking of Strong Style. It'll be right there for you. Really great time had with him and wanted to thank him again for that.
And so, yeah, Venkin mentions too that he let Daniel Bryan do CMLL and things. CMLL, I'm very, very curious to see what kind of CMLL representation we'll have either at Best of the Super Juniors, G1, all the way.
Okay. Given the fact that the last time Gabe Kidd was in a hardcore match, several people got hospitalized. I am not necessarily sure that is the example that you want to cite when you say it's totally safe for Ospreay to be in this match.
Oh, you think Ospreay's coming back on Eddie
Kingston?
That's
what he was saying. He thinks Ospreay might show up at and be Kingston's partner in the two teams. And I'm just like, no, I don't know about that one.
Yeah, well, you know, Tony Khan's has some interesting feelings on stuff like that. Whether he protects some people and whether he doesn't. So on one hand, he's letting Darby Allin fall off a ladder through glass and then climb Mount Everest. Turns out he's not going to, he broke his foot, but you know, he's willing to let him risk his life. But I'm not sure how protective
Golden Goof, man. They're, yeah. I just,
no, I don't think he's gonna be
there. I can't see it.
Now he might be there. Like he might be there with Alex, but I don't know about him being in that tornado.
That's what I'm saying. Like that hardcore match, just 8 days before he's got a big Danielson match with Gabe Kidd in the mix. I'm like, you are tempting fate. Yeah. You are tempting fate hard.
And Venkin mentions it here that Eddie, I owe you one after Battle in the Valley has to come into play. Yeah, that, no, you're right.
I agree. Absolutely. I just, there are things that you can read tea leaves, and it could have just been an off-the-cuff thing that it can come up at another point and cash in. And I totally validate that there are things about this that make it seem entirely likely that Will Ospreay could be one of the partners. But if you were to ask me whether I think he's one of the partners, I don't think he is.
Okay. Well, do you have any thoughts on who are? Because I'm a little bit stumped.
I thought Homicide would be one of them.
Yeah.
I thought Ortiz was going to be.
Yeah, well, he's hurt.
He's out. So, I don't know. There might be some kind of tag team in the wings that might be able to throw down. I just don't know who. Like, do you think like FTR would surprise show up or something like that, or anything like that? Like,
I'd love that.
Right now, Edge and Mark Briscoe could show up and be a tag partner if we get there.
Yeah, Mark. Venkin mentions Mark. Venkin thinks Mark Briscoe. I will pass on Adam Copeland all day, every day.
It would be hilarious. Like, do you understand
his tone deaf interview on Dynamite last night? God almighty.
The internet would explode if Adam Copeland showed up and was one of the tag partners for Eddie Kingston. You know what I mean? Like, it just, that's one of those things, like, you thought Jack Perry was crazy in New Japan.
Yeah, I like to see Penta. Okay, Venkin's mentioning Penta. That's not a bad one. That's a
good one. You've got a whole lot of nothing going on besides TBS, whatever Matt title that Copeland has.
How long is Fenix out?
He's been out for a while, and he is not coming back anytime soon.
Damn it. That's too bad. Yeah, that's a shame. And I know Vikingo is another guy I would love to see in New Japan at some point, although there's politics after politics on Vikingo. But he's also hurt, of course.
I am.
Don't say it, Venkin. Don't do it.
This is a mystery vortex thing, and we won't know until they come through the door. But it could be a lot of fun.
Venkin keeps torturing me with the Adam Copeland idea. Ah, God, I'd rather not. I would just.
Hey, on this day, I see clearly about their booking plans, all right?
There's not enough vodka in this. All right. Okay, well, with that in mind, anything else before we wrap this up? We're a little bit early, but I think we've covered the Sakura Genesis show.
We've done the deal. Again, we have an episode 100 next week. We're going to have Justin Nipper and potentially other people joining us. We'll be talking about various things, including his experiences with Noah, including maybe some talk about Julia showing up in Noah. Yeah. In addition to that, he'll talk about the Windy City preview with us. And then we will have our live show with Josh DeVee from We Work Stiff immediately after the Windy City Riot on that Friday night. Steven, take it from here.
Very much looking forward to all of that. And don't forget for all the shows here on Fight Game Media Network and Power Bombshells on Sunday at Dynamite Show, all the rest. So we really appreciate it, by the way. Just the idea that we're doing our 100th episode is really stunning. And Jeremy and I are so thrilled that we get to do this week after week. It is funny. When we originally had this concept, we just said, maybe an hour every other week would be enough. That's enough to cover what's going on.
Negative Ghost Rider.
And, other than that, who would be interested? Well, we've got great people like Venkin, Colin, all the usual guys that come in, Dunstan, and so many more, not just you guys, all the people that listen week after week, watch week after week. And you've given us this platform here and an audience, and we love it. And we're so grateful that we've able to do this 100 times coming up next week. So I wanted to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. I love talking about this stuff. We've managed to talk to.
I like talking about it with you. I don't want to get your ego up too high, but you're.
No. But I enjoy it. We've managed to talk to some really great people: ELP, yes. Hikaleo, Tom Lawler, Chris Samsa, Dave Meltzer, so many more than that. I mean, Justin's been on. Paul Fontaine's been on. We've had
Scott
some really
wrestling.
Great, Scott has been a key part of a lot of.
We're branching out, bringing more people on constantly. It's like people like us.
Mel's been on the show. I'm forgetting some folks, but we've been very fortunate. Thank you all for giving you this opportunity to do it. So we will have that 100th episode next week. So until then, for Jeremy Finestone, I'm Stephen Conway. Enjoy WrestleMania weekend, everybody. So much good stuff to watch, and we will talk to you again real soon.
Acknowledge the bloodline.